But we have like an original song that we use for intro and close, which was very cool to be able to get because it's called Delaware is Burning. It's the song that that synth pop guy made for Jess. It has like the Chris Coons in the background and all that. Have you ever heard it?
That's who's in the background. I've heard the song a million times.
But
he's
like, I've had protesters in my office. That's Coons. Yeah, so if you just Googled the 2D Cat, DC artist, he said, he was going to give this album or give this away for free for anybody who donated to Jess. So, of course, I already had donated to Jess, and I spoke with them, and I was like, can I use it for the podcast? And he was like, yeah, sure. Do whatever you want. So that's been our theme song, actually. But that gets cut in. From the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. This is Rob. This is your Highlands Bunker podcast. Hello. I'm flying solo today. No Kay Foster Stomberg, no super producer Carl, but I think we can do it, and we have something a little bit fun, a little bit different for everybody. Today, we are hosting in the studio the co-hosts of a new area podcast. And again, I don't usually do this. I'm not a fan of all these podcasts that have been popping up. Spotlight Delaware's got one. You guys got one. But this is really good. There's two episodes online. I've listened to them both. They're very funny. The podcast is called, for lack of a better word, we have local comedians, Medina Wilson-Anton, and her uncle, Rocky Wilson. Hello.
Yes, hello. Hello.
How are you?
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us, sir.
I'm so glad. So Medina talked you into doing this, Rocky? Is that what happened?
I would say that, yes. Well, it's... They don't have to talk me into anything. Anything that she wants to do, I'm with it if I have the time. So I had the time today, so I'm here, and I'm glad to be here. Like a nice person, nice guy, nice area.
Cool. Well, thanks.
Crazy parking,
very nice area, yeah.
Crazy parking, but you know, I got it.
Crazy parking, big Trump signs, you know.
Yeah. One Trump sign. That guy's a goofy guy.
In fact, I pulled up so he can pull in behind me.
So you saw him pull in?
Yeah,
big goofy
pulled in.
Big,
he couldn't get in. Yeah,
goofy. Oh, wow.
I'm not going to say goofy. You never know who's listening.
That's true. Well, hopefully they're listening. He's my neighbor. I can say yeah, that. Like it's funny because we get along with them. They have kids. We get along with his wife and everything. He's just like...
Trump guy.
Yeah, he's just a Trump guy.
But he... I was parked. I had plenty of space in front of me and the back of me. And I seen him like trying to back in. Like you drove up, looked at me, and started backing in a little small space. So I pulled up some to make it easy for him.
This is my uncle.
He has bunker mindset. He does anything Medina asks if he can, which is bunker mindset. We know that. And yeah. he's neighborly. That's fucking mindset.
You have to be.
And he's not, I don't think you're out of your element, right? You just moved back up here from North Carolina. So
people are a lot nicer on the surface. Everybody's real nice on the surface in North Carolina.
Let me ask you, but you're from here. You're a Philly guy.
Yeah, from Justin.
So this is, you're the perfect person to ask, because people always ask me, like, I was just out in Arizona. There was a lot of, like, West Coast tourists at the place I was at. And I find, like, California sort of like that, too, and I hate it. Like, Philadelphia, New York, like, the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic, they're mean, but you always know where you stand with somebody. Nobody's being fake with you, you know? Nobody's just kind of, like, being superficial, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
Do you find that?
I think North Carolina, or the part I was in, Greensboro, like nice is a tradition. You know, it's like everyone says hello all the time. You walk into, it's kind of different in some places because you can tell where the natives, you could tell the natives right away, the people who were born and raised in an area, because you all say hello and how are you, good morning. But people who aren't from the area, they might not even speak to you. But, when we moved there in 2011, we saw a lot of natives everywhere you went. Hello, how are you? How are you? Good to see you. How are you doing? How was your weekend?
He's like, who are you?
But now he left there in 2024 this year, and you can see it like a lot of out-of-towners were coming in and people from up north, so you didn't get a lot of nice in the morning.
I know that
all the time.
That whole area in North Carolina is a big growth area. A lot of different cities down there, like banking and different sort of tech, and it's like getting a lot of like transplants.
They are. A lot of big offices are coming there from all over, making their central work there. But it's nice there. It's quiet, you know, and where we live, a lot of space and plenty of Targets and stuff like that.
That's what you're looking for, shopping? You're looking for big box shopping? Yeah.
Good Targets and good restaurants that you can don't have to wait. They don't give you the box. You can actually sit there.
No
and,
buzzers.
No buzzers. Yeah, a buzzless restaurant system. Yeah.
You know what? You have, you know, very realistic things. Just be comfortable. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to tell you, first of all, you guys have a great rapport. And I didn't know when I was listening to the first one, when it came out, that, and I obviously found out into the middle of it that you're Medina's uncle. So it actually made sense. I was like, oh, they do know each other. Because that's the cool part of it. It's fun to have to listen to a conversation, a casual conversation between two people who can like riff. So that was really cool. And you talked about something in the last episode that I want to talk about first before we do the funny story. I have always been a huge comedy fan since I've been a little kid.
Oh, okay.
And I think we're maybe around the same age.
Yeah.
I just turned 50.
Oh, not too close, but.
Okay. Well, older.
I'm a little older than you are.
Okay. And
a little older.
And I'm younger than both of you, so.
You know what? The adults in the room.
Gonna say that. For the listeners' sake.
Yeah, they didn't know either. I'm so glad you mentioned it to them.
Yeah.
You're not a known person or anything like that. But I grew up, even as a kid, when we first got HBO,
mm-hmm.
you know, you get all the big specials. And sometimes we'd get to watch him. You mentioned Bill Cosby himself, which, you know, he was famously, for some reason, didn't curse or use blue language. He just raped, which is weird. It's like weird. Like, he could just use the bad language and not.
Oh, my God.
Say rape nicely.
Yeah. He was hey, I'm not gonna curse. I'm just going to roofie your drink.
Wow.
That's kind of weird.
That's actually a really good premise, Rob.
Drink the goddamn drink. Not the goddamn drink. Drink the goddamn drink.
Gosh darn it.
I'm going to.
But I remember watching Bill Cosby himself because it was like there was my parents would be crying, laughing, and then sometimes they'd be like, you can't, this is George Carlin, you can't watch this. You got to go,
in
the bedroom. You know, we could hear them, which was the worst, to go back in the bedroom and know like Richard Pryor's on or George Carlin and hear them just breaking up and you're like just sitting there like a jerk.
Cosby was so funny though.
But I remember even before, and I wish I could remember what year it was, I must have been 13, 14, somebody's dad or mom, or they rented it from like the video frequency tape place, Eddie Murphy Delirious. And I was like, oh, this is so great. So I remember that and this big boom and all of these different like kind of acts, and I was into it, the way that they could put these acts together. And of course, that changed with the internet now, which on the surface you would think it's good because you don't have like, it's the same with like all media, because I think about media too when you do podcasts and alternative media. Like, you don't want like the gatekeepers at HBO saying who's good enough, who's not good.
Yeah,
you want to give more of an egalitarian thing. Mm-hmm. But what you find is, and this is what you guys mentioned, that the thing you need to sell yourself with is like brief clips and crowd work, which is completely different than like than a set, than a real like story. And I don't like that as much. There are some people who do a lot of crowd work, but the reason that's good is because of AI and algorithms. Because they put it on TikTok and shorts and stuff, and that's how it gets in your algorithm. And you pushed the AI sort of thing to the side and didn't talk about it. But I want to bring it up and see what you think about it, because that's kind of what that is, right? It's like the algorithm is saying. I just read an article, because they call these pictures that you see, the really weird online pictures that AI does, they call it just slop, because it's like the most ridiculous thing, because they just punch a bunch of popular phrases in. And it's like, you know, poor boy in New York with, you know, that made a clock out of a Coca-Cola bottles or something.
It just doesn't look right.
It's too much stuff together. Or it's like, you know, Jesus in a Superman outfit that just made the map of the world out of like vodka bottles or something or whatever. It just doesn't make sense. And so you lose something in the translation, right? And I just wanted to pick your brain about if what you think about it, especially because you've gone through different eras of a comedy, and how you feel about just starting out. Do you feel like you have to come up with concepts that you can clip and put? Do you feel like you have to come up with crowd work or anything? Do you feel compelled to have to do that to get more traction?
I don't feel compelled to do that right now. And I mean, I don't have like a social media manager or something that's like, this is your plan. Like, this is what you know, like I'm kind of just figuring it out on my own. And I don't have that much time to like actually sit there and edit and clip all my material. So I have, there's, if you, you know, go on my TikTok, there's quite a lot of material on there that I've clipped into like 15, 30 second clips, but it's not consistent. It's something that I just do when I have the time. One thing that I have noticed is a lot of people, when they watch videos on social media, they don't have the sound on. I think that's like a newer phenomenon. People might be watching videos in meetings or like on the bus or whatever. And so what's really popular is to put captions and like dynamic captions. And I don't know if you've noticed, the two of you, like in your own lives, that you're like, oh yeah, I do watch like Facebook and I'm just scrolling without the sound
on. I've noticed the captions on a lot of TikToks now.
That's like one of the pieces of advice that I've heard. You don't like it?
I don't want to sit
yeah.
there.
I'm torn on it because like I know I watch videos with the sound off pretty frequently. But also if the captions are just a tad too soon, it ruins the joke for me because I read faster than they'll get to the punchline.
And I just noticed too, like, depending on the type of closed captions, like it'll miss a word or two. It doesn't do well.
A lot of it's AI generated.
Right. Some
captions.
Of it's AI, so it doesn't do well with like names. So you just see like somebody said a proper name or formal name, proper name, and then it's just a bunch of gibberish because it couldn't make it out. And now if you're just reading, you completely lose track of the thing.
Yeah.
So I have noticed it, but I'm not a huge fan.
As far as crowd work goes, you know, like you're saying, I grew up in a time when performers were performers. You know, you would never see, other than Don Rickles, you would never see, well, a few other comics too, but Don Rickles come to mind. Excuse me. But you would never see like a Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor had like one or two jokes where he, you know, ad-libbed about a person in the audience. Cosby, you never saw that. You never see George Carlin go into a crowd. You never seen Jack Benny. You never seen none of these guys ever went into a crowd. So we grew up watching that. So for me to have to do crowd work, it's almost like, you know, you're telling me to do something that's not even comedy to me. But since I've been like more or less getting back into it, I see that you need to have crowd work because you lose the audience right away. If you don't talk to them. When I was coming up, when I started out, you didn't have to worry about that because the audience was with you. Now you have to include the audience. You have to include the audience somewhere in your set. You can't do a whole set for an hour unless you're a star without saying, well, how are you doing? Or how's this going? Or what y'all think about that? Because everybody wants to be included now. You know, I think that's why movies are like going down because people don't want to just sit there and they want to talk to the screen. They want to talk to each other. Like I was saying to Medina in the last episode, not many people sit through a TV show now without grabbing the remote and going to something else or commercial. And also the attention span is really
right.
It's really short now. That's the only thing I have to say about that.
But, I've noticed that the thing about people wanting to be involved is like, it's a little weird, but it's true. You're right. I mean, I notice it just watching shows now, watching comedy shows and stuff. And yeah, it's like it used to be if you did anything other than laugh, you were like a heckler.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you needed to be dealt with in some fashion.
Yeah, quickly.
Yeah. You needed to be, you know, cashiered in some way. And that's that. Now it's sort of like the beginning of a conversation. But I guess, I mean, that's also a craft, if that's the kind of show people want to see. I don't particularly like it. I like the old style where you get sort of almost a whole story and a callback almost at the end where it sort of brings it all together. There's a theme. Yeah, that's what I liked.
An act, even.
It's an act, yeah. It takes... I mean, I guess, you know, thinking of funny quips when you see certain situations in the audience, you know, you see a bunch of drunk women together, or you see a big goofy guy that looks like he's by himself, or there's a lot of things you can play off of. But, like, and you can write little quips about that, and I guess that's writing. But to really have an hour that you can do that has an arc and a theme to it in some fashion, that's what I enjoy.
Yeah. Exactly, an act.
Yeah.
You know, back around, you know, Patrice O'Neill.
Yeah, of course.
You know, Patrice. He was a friend of mine. I knew Patrice for years. But anyway, I don't mean to just name drop. But
we love that. Also, Bunker Mindset. That's also Bunker Mindset. But, oh, you're not producing. I knew.
But around the time that he was about ready to depart, I noticed that people would, because he was really good at riffing on the audience. You know, even though Patrice, he would always, you know, but it wasn't part of his act. It wasn't like he wrote this stuff in. Patrice was so good that he was on time with the jokes, with, no matter what was going on. Anyway, but I noticed about around the time he departed around 2011, that was starting to come into play. In fact, I was at the Helium in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
The last time I saw Patrice. And this is the late 2010, around November, October, he passed away in 2011. But anyway, somewhere around, I can't remember exactly. But I noticed that people came out just so he can mess with them. It's little pockets so he would do a little bit, you know. But then at that night, they put out like four people. Because he said, they come to see a show, man. What are you doing? I'm trying to. Hey, listen. I know why you're here. I know what you want to do. But hey, they want to see a show, right? Yay! Like, right. Get them out of here. And he left. Yeah. You know. But I noticed that was kind of like building. I'm not saying I'm against it. I'm not talking bad about it. But it's a difference between then. And what's going on now?
Yeah. I mean, some of it's good. Like Stavi. I don't know if you ever saw Stavi. He's good because his crowd work, sort of like you're saying, it's very particular. So when somebody throws out something completely off the wall, now they're there to get insulted by him in the way that he does it. But it's so like they'll say something completely off the wall, and he'll be able to come up with something right in the moment that isn't general or contrived. So he's pretty good at it. There have been people who are good at it. So I think, you know, if you can say that there are good comedians who do it well, you're not really knocking it. You're just saying it's completely different, I think is right.
What I also find, I guess, a little bit frustrating is some people, like, they just don't understand the etiquette of going to a comedy show, right? Like, I've had instances where there's people in the audience that are just, like, they're heckling, and then they're like, oh, I was trying to help you. And I'm like, okay, then shut up. Like, you're throwing me off.
That works.
That's been going on for years, trying to help you.
Yeah. But, like, that's because there's now an understanding that, like, you can go to a show and yell stuff out, and people want to be shut down by the comic. And there's, like, there's a misunderstanding. It's like, not all shows are like that. Not all comics want that.
And it's a thing about, like, not all comics want it. And it's more like, I want to deal with it and get on with it. Not I'm trying
like,
to, like,
you are not.
I'm not going out there and trying to get it. I'll deal with it if it comes. I was just thinking about that. I think about that famous. It's one of my favorite sets. It's like 9 minutes. Bernie Mac at the Apollo, and he comes out at one of the big shows at the Apollo, and apparently the person before him just bombed. Like, and they're yelling, screaming. They get him off the stage. It was you know, a real scene, and he just walks out with, like, these, I don't know, who knows, it must have been the early 2000s, maybe the 90s, with these, like, airbrushed jeans and his big thing, and he just walks out, he grabs the mic, and he goes, I'm not scared of you motherfuckers. And everybody snapped too. I see what you're doing. I'm not scared of you.
That's his first tape, and he talked about that.
It was one of my favorite things.
He talks about that, how everyone was bombing. The crowd was real rough. And they were saying backstage, there was another comic, and he was saying, I'm not scared. He was saying, Bernie, I was afraid. He said, I'm not scared of them motherfuckers. And he went out there. Because sometimes, you know, I'm sure you probably know as a comedian, all the comedians, as a comedian, you know, when you have a conversation in your head, or you might say something that you think is funny, you might even open up your set with that, because it pops right back to you.
Right.
It's just something how funny things just come to you so quick. So that's how that came to be. Just the story that I heard him talk about on.
Yeah, the rest of the set, which is something that you mentioned in the last episode, the rest of the set doesn't really age that well, because it's a lot of, like, I mean, it's like sex jokes and stuff, which are still funny, but it's a little bit, it's pretty crass.
Bernie, you're talking about the rest
Bernie
of that?
Bernie Mac, because it's probably 25 years old or more.
It's older than that.
I'm too young to remember it when it happened, but there was a, now I won't remember who it was, but there's a rapper who sampled part of that and made me, like, I was like, what? that's Bernie Mac's voice. What is that? And that's how I ended up finding it on YouTube.
Yeah.
I think Brother Ali sampled it in one of his
rock. You know, today, a lot of comics today would tell you that the ones I've talked to tell you that if you can't handle crowd work, then you're not really a comedian. They say that you're scared of the craft. That's how...
So much has changed.
That's how much has changed. You know, when I was coming up, if you did crowd work and just crowd work, we wasn't getting booked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had to have a set.
Truth to that now.
You had to have order, set, callbacks. You had to have these things. It had to be joke, this, that, topics, and you stuck to them.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's comics still doing that. I'm just saying, but
yeah, for sure. But I think it's gotten a little lax now, right? Like you have to have a strong.
Yeah.
I don't think people are getting, besides maybe like Matt Rife or something, like, and even he has material, right? Like you have to have a strong set, and there are crowds that don't want to interact. They want to sit there and laugh. But if you can't handle a rough room, you know, or like adapt, yeah, you're definitely going to struggle.
I sort of look at it as just a different show. They're curating a different audience. Because, like, old heads, like, I still listen to his podcast now and then when he speaks to somebody cool, but, like, Marc Maron. Like, he'll tell stories about his life and kind of insert funny little anecdotes and jokes. When you go see that kind of show, you know what you're getting. You're not going there to goof around.
But you also know that America's Got Talent now, right? For people that I've talked to that have done that, you have to give them a script. You have to give them, yeah,
right.
you have to give them every line.
Word, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You can't say this, you have to give them word for word. Yeah.
And you can't go straight or low because
it's television and you can't.
Yeah, even like Tonight Show and stuff. Like they want
Tonight Show.
I've seen people perform certain jokes a certain way over and over, and then they're on the Tonight Show and they're using different words because they were like, nah,
yeah,
you can't say that on this show.
Well, they used to say that when people used back in the day when people would get booked on Johnny Carson, the Tonight Show, and having a type five that maybe they did some of it or. It was specific for that.
Yeah.
It was no cursing,
yeah.
No like blue material, but still sort of based on the stuff that you did, which is kind of difficult. But yeah, people would have a specific 5 minutes for like.
Right. And they want to know it in advance so they can clear it. So like it can't just be improvised. And you got to know it works.
But a lot of people don't know that. They think that they can just go on a Tonight Show or go on America's Got Talent. And just do 5 minutes of whatever comes through their head.
Yeah.
But nobody's going to pay you
$30,000
to improvise. Do what you do.
Yeah, I mean, so my uncle and I have been, since he's moved back up here, we've been hitting open mics and doing shows together and going up to New York. And it's been a lot of fun. But at the open mics, there's also a lot of folks that think that, right? Like they think they can just show up and just say whatever comes to mind while they're on stage. No preparation, no nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta imagine you've seen a lot of people bomb, really just bomb.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. That's I've not even bombed before.
It's like you're not even doing it, really.
I'll tell you something. If you're real funny, and if you say you're starting out and you're real funny, people really like you, because I've been there, it's hard to not do things that way. Because that's what works for you. It's hard to sit down and structure it because you don't feel the flow. You know, when I first done stand up was at the talent show. I had a little script, you know, but I went completely away from everything, and I just did whatever came to my mind, and that worked good for me. It took me a long time to realize. It took bombing or getting embarrassed for me to realize, hey, Rock, you gotta like really tighten this up.
Yeah.
That's the cool
thing about comedy, right? Is like you go out if you have that, if you have you're working on an hour or an hour and a half, you go out to different places and try it this way. It doesn't really work that way, but you try it a different way, same sort of material, but you try it a different way, people loved it. Then you use it again and they don't love it. And so it's like, you know, you build up over time of actually doing it to where, you know, at the end, you know every word you're going to say. You even know what the pauses you're going to do.
Yeah.
But it takes doing it 100 times to be able to do it.
Yeah. Because before when I stopped, I'm doing comedy all the time. I guess it was around, what, 99 or whatever. Before that time, I mean, I would be talking like I'm talking to you right now, and 3-4 bits are already back here. I'm mouthing, and I already have the joke coming for the next thing. I'm writing and preparing.
Automatic.
Because you know your stuff so much that, okay, I got this in there, but I'm going to put this with that. But that's with that. And I'm talking the whole time. That was nice. But I quit, and all that fell back. So now I'm starting over again here in 2011.
24, almost 25.
A lot of us are starting new things. A lot of us are new things.
Yeah.
So what the hell?
But it's fun. We love it. We're having a good time.
Plus, I got to say, it's a lot of fun as a female comic going to open mics and having, you know, muscle with me, my uncle with me. Mm-hmm. Man, it's nice.
That is
so-called
man,
muscle.
It's nice.
I look like a good,
yeah, but that's all you have to do. You only have to look like it. You know?
Yeah.
Just give somebody, don't even, actually, the less you
it's
say,
awesome.
The probably the better it is. Like, just look at somebody.
Yeah, just some places you go to now are really crazy, though. Some of the clubs. You know, but hey, you know.
It's been fun.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's been fun. So, our podcast, we talk about comedy. Our different perspectives. Obviously, we're from different generations. Pop culture, Black history.
Family.
Yeah, Wilson family values.
Yeah, Wilson family, yeah.
And
family affair.
In the coming future, we'll have some guests on. And my uncle's got quite a Rolodex of really well-known, hilarious people. So, yeah.
Yeah, reach out to them. It's like, I want to reach out to them, but like, I want a favor. But I don't want to ask for a favor at the same time, so I'm in contact with some people.
Yeah, that's how my uncle is. Me, on the other hand, I'm like, hey!
Do my show right now. Not Thursday, I'm open. That's what I'm going to start doing.
Heard you in town.
That's what I'm going to start doing, you know. I was fortunate enough to meet a lot of people before they became. I started in 1978, 79, so I knew a lot of people when.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like the very beginning of the heyday.
I was at the Raw taping.
Oh, you Eddie Murphy Raw.
I was at the taping of Raw.
I remember when Raw because of the story I told you before, because we were like 14 or 15 and we saw Delirious. Like, I think somebody brought the tape over, like it was a summer and my parents were at work or whatever. So we could everybody from 12 to 15 in the neighborhood came to watch Eddie Murphy Delirious, and we all thought we were doing something, you know, like underground.
Yeah, Delirious.
You know, it was like it was like a dissident thing. And then when Raw came out, like maybe 2 years later, I was like 17 and I'm like, we're gonna watch on HBO. My mom and dad were like, you think you're ready for this? I'm like, I think I'm probably ready. But yeah, Eddie Murphy was people, and that's the thing too, things sort of change. You watch that stuff now, a lot of it's still funny, but some of it doesn't translate anymore.
It was so, if you look at it now, you figure he was 23, 24. Yeah. So it was really like juvenile in a lot of the material. Like, it's talking about a dead bird with the stick and the ice cream. And
you ain't got no ice cream.
Yeah, ice cream. And, you know, that's like really, it's funny, but it was like
for G.I. Joe child, swimming G.I. underwater.
Joe, yeah. And then,
you had me until that one. Now I don't know that one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
because he used to, that was his thing too. He would wear the leather, the full
mm-hmm.
leather suit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think I've seen Raw, not Delirious. No. I've seen Delirious, not Raw. Yeah.
Both are good. Both are pretty good.
Yeah.
But himself, Bill Cosby, that's my favorite.
Yeah, that's my homework.
That's one that's really good. And Chris Rock's, the first one. It's pretty good too. Chris Rock first special is good. All the George Carlin stuff you watched, I'm sure, some of that.
Oh, yeah, all the George Carlin stuff.
Up until the last few years when he got a little different.
Yeah,
George Carlin did.
I mean,
he's mad or something.
Yeah, he would go up. And I've seen, I don't actually.
Tombstones behind him.
Yeah, I actually don't mind this that much when people come with notes when they're working on something and you know you're at one of their things that they're like at the beginning of the process, not the end of the process. I actually think that's
fun.
But
yeah.
I saw Carlin do one of those one time where he had the notebook. And he would just look at it for some notes and then do the bit.
Yeah, he did do that. Yeah,
and then do the bit.
That.
So, yeah. But it wasn't like he was reading it. He would look and say, oh, yeah, that's
what
I want to do.
This one,
and then he'd try like a 5 minutes, 10 minutes to see if it worked and see how it was going and then do another one.
Yeah, Carlin,
which I actually liked.
Yeah. Carlin said he would write, he would put out a block of time every day and write for like a regular job for 2 or 3 hours a day.
Mm.
And that's discipline.
Yeah,
can
I mean,
you sit
a lot
down
of the
and
greats,
write jokes?
A lot of the greats do that. Yes and no.
I'm trying to do that.
Yeah, I haven't done it in a while, but for a period of time, me and a couple other comics would meet on Zoom and we would go through material and work on tags. And this is how I'm thinking of like setting this joke up. What do you think? What if you try it that way? What if you do it this way? I find that to be more productive. But I have in the past sat down and said like, okay, these are all the premises I have. Let me flesh out how it could go. But I do feel like I'm kind of more similar to you in that, like, I have a sense of where I want to go with it, but it's in the room at the open mic that I'm now like, oh, like scribbling everything down. It's like something about the urgency of needing to prepare that kicks me into gear. Okay. Yeah. I have trouble just like sitting at home on a Saturday afternoon, like, let me sit down. And
I know that if I can do that, I could really be a really better comedian.
Yeah.
I can't sit. I try. And I guess the fact that I even say I can't, really, it starts from right there.
Yeah.
I have to start saying I will sit down here
And
write me some jokes for 2.5 hours, an hour or so, or a page a day or something. Back years ago, comic told me, a veteran comic. You ever heard of Franken and the Jai?
Yeah, he's written like books on how to.
I was on the show with him. I told him basically the same thing. I was like 20, 21 maybe. He was in his, I don't know how old he was, but he told me if you really want to be funny, Rock, you got to sit down, add a typewriter, add a pencil or paper, and write out your jokes.
Yeah,
every day because
you really want to be.
He says always meat on the. He says always meat.
Yeah.
Say. No. He said to me, you're leaving a lot of meat on the bone.
Yeah.
And I forgot that.
Yeah.
You know. He was
easier than just sitting there and coming up with it.
He said, do it every day and it'll come to you. But, you know, you have to look up Frank and the Giant, watch some of that. He's really, really talented. Good. He's a jazz. He plays that clarinet on stage, too. And he does his jokes, and then he starts playing the clarinet. And he does his jokes, and he's playing the clarinet.
So here's my story. And I think we can riff on it because it's sort of like the stuff you guys have been doing on yours. And it's also. Like, we write bits in here sometimes, or we know we're going to tell a story, but it's way different because I'm not doing it in front of live, and Carl can delete it if it's bad or cut it up. And so we never go forward with it and refine it. It's like a one-shot deal to see if but okay. I want to tell you guys this story. So we have this sort of large group of friends and friends of friends you've been over for barbecues and stuff. We do a lot of cooking for people and dinner parties.
Yeah.
Well, there's a certain couple that do a curry cook-off every year, and everybody brings a curry. And then there's another couple that do a chili cook-off every year. Everybody brings a chili. They judge them. They have trophies. They've been doing it 10, 15 years. This is like a big thing. But there's always controversy. I guess because everybody's drinking. I don't know. This is just always, like, one year. Because sometimes people make, like, what I call like novelty dishes. Mm. Like I lost one year. I made the most beautiful chicken curry, this like Southern Indian curry. It was dark, but I had the chicken. And somebody brought a Philadelphia cheesesteak curry.
Mm. Oh, I see what you're saying.
And that won.
Oh, no.
So
I don't even want to call it.
Call the police.
Like, I was going to call the Indian consulate and be like, can someone get here immediately? This, like, there's a
race. Yeah, this is a diplomatic incident.
I was not happy.
Philadelphia cheesesteak curry.
Look, you know what?
We don't need
to talk about it. They used whiz instead of cream or.
You know what? To be honest with you, I didn't eat any. Because I'm not eating that. And now a friend of mine, Andre, did taste it. And he's like, it sucks because it's not, you know, it's not what it is.
Was it, wait, I'm sorry, finish the story.
No, we're supposed to riff on it.
Did
they put bread in it?
There was bread on the side. Instead of naan.
Like a dip.
Instead of naan, it was like a small roll.
Uh-huh.
Instead of like, not. Again, your face is what I was doing. And I was the one who lost. I was came in second.
And you didn't want to touch
it. You came
it,
in
huh?
second to that?
Yeah. Now, I did win the inaugural. For everybody listening who knows this, I did win the inaugural curry cook-off. So I won the first one. No one can ever take that away from me.
The first trophy, yeah.
Yeah. But there's always something.
Okay.
Like that. I remember I was the judge one time for the chili cook-off, and I thought one of the dishes was the best dish, but I thought it was more like a soup than a curry, than a chili. But it was a beautiful dish. And then when we said that, the person who made it was like, fucking very mad. because they were like, "You're saying I made the best dish and I didn't win?" Like, so that got me. That person's really like, it was legitimately mad at me.
You guys need to come up with a rubric if you don't have one.
I know.
That's well,
it doesn't
matter,
and it doesn't really matter because every time we try to think we have it sorted out, it just gets worse, and that's what happened this year. So this year, I had been traveling to Tucson, so I came back late in the week. I wasn't going to make a chili. Susan actually won a Lifetime Achievement Award at the chili because she makes these buttermilk biscuits with like cheddar and jalapeno in them. She's made them like 10 years in a row, so she won an award,
that
Lifetime Achievement
delicious.
Award. So they said, Angela, who's Owen's wife, who sort of runs the thing, said, you're going to be a judge. And Loretta, who is Bert Manitz, if anybody remembers Bert, little Indian-born English man, we used to do the podcast in his basement. His wife, who also cooks, and she runs the curry cook-off, actually. She was going to be a judge, and Jordan Pusey was going to be a judge, the three of us. And we were going to decide the regular award, and then there's like a People's Choice Award. So there's like six different chilies, right? And of those six, we're eating them one by one, taking notes out by ourselves out in the living room. We get to the end, and Loretta liked one of them, I liked one of them, and Jordan liked one of them. Mm. And Jordan's like, the one you like is too spicy. I'm like, that's stupid that you would even say that. But I'll tell you what. I said, I'll tell you what.
Oh, Lord.
And the other one that they both liked was more like, had a sour note to it. So it was more like Carolina pulled pork. So again, it was very good, but that's not what I think chili is like. You know, it's not. Anyway, so we get the one that Jordan wanted and the one that I wanted, and we're trying it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, the one that Jordan wanted was like, it was bean heavy, which I'm not like.
Okay.
First of all, I don't even really think you can put beans in them at all. But if you do, it seemed a little,
seems
a little
chili.
Bean heavy. It wasn't as spicy.
Bean heavy.
Look, you have to use these words when you're describing food.
I feel
food.
Like that's this episode title.
That's bean.
Bean heavy.
Bean heavy featuring. Okay, I'm sorry. Continue.
That's part, like we're.
It's just such a strange way to put it.
I mean, how would
but
you
I
say
know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, it's too many
now,
fucking
beans. Now, I
love
beans and chili, but I get exactly what you mean.
And also, it had, like, cheese in it already
no,
almost.
That's wrong. That's wrong.
Correct.
Cheese
everything you're saying.
Cheese is a topping. What are you going to do, put sour cream in it, too?
I wish you were the fucking judge.
I like chili.
I like
I
chili,
love chili.
So we get down, and I'm like, look, I don't know.
Would
so
they
I
do
turn.
Put rice in it, too?
I turn.
You put rice in your chili.
In it?
You can sure like, on the side.
Yeah,
side.
On the side.
It's not paella. Here we go. This is the three of us could be a
paella.
Judge.
Paella.
But paella has rice in it.
Never heard of that. Oh, paella, okay.
The Spanish dish with the big plate thing. The three of us. See, if the three of us were judges, there'd be more controversy.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happens.
No, there wouldn't, because we would have agreed on
we
the
We would have agreed, yeah. So I'm sort of like, okay, I look at Jordan, I look at Loretta. Loretta's, an older Indian woman. She cooks, and I'm like, she's not going to let me down. And she's like, okay, we'll vote for hers. So
oh, for
now,
Jordan's
so
place.
Jordan's bean heavy.
Sour. Sour.
Not the sour one. The sour one we discarded. I liked another one, but... Then she said,
so
I like the one, there was one that was a venison curry, this beautiful deer, like deer back meat curry. She said it was too tomato-y. So I should have known when she
Wait,
said
chili
that.
Chili was too tomato-y?
Look, I'm just telling you what she said.
Tomato-y.
So I don't even know.
Never heard of that.
I never heard of it either. She's making it. So I kind of promised everybody that there wouldn't be controversy because there's always controversy.
well, that's where you went wrong.
I know. And I said, look, we're going to build consensus. I kept saying we're going to build consensus. Maybe that should be the title. We're building consensus. So we tell Angela that we're going to vote for three. And I just go outside. Now everybody else is eating. Now everything's out at a buffet where the whole party, there was like 20 other people at the party. They're going to go up to the buffet and eat. And I go outside and just get my drink. And I'm like, whatever. It doesn't really matter. About 20 minutes go by. And Angela yells out of the house just for me. She's like, Rob, can you come back in for a minute? And I'm like, fuck. So I go back in and she goes, look, I don't want to override you guys. I just want to have a quick conversation. She shows me, like, the one I wanted was almost gone. The venison one, almost gone. The other one had gotten about half eaten. And the one that we picked to win, I don't think anybody ate. It's like,
no!
Pants fucking full. And she just goes, she looks at it and she just, I can't make a face on the radio, but she's just like, one of those, like, yeah, what, like, what the fuck are we supposed to do? Yeah, and I just looked at it and I was like, oof. So I said, I'm calling him in.
Yeah.
So I go out. I was like, Loretta, Jordan, come in.
Go back in there.
Come in. So I'm coming back in. Now we're having a thing. So now we're in there. I'm explaining to Angela what happened in the judges thing. I was like, because she brought out the extra plates. I was like, remember when you brought out those extra plates? Because I'm trying to cover my ass now. I said, Angela, remember when you did that? And I was trying to. She's like, yeah, I remember. I said, well, never forget it because I feel like something's up now. So we're in there and she's like, look. And Jordan Pusey was fucking adamant that this was the one. And so I was, she's like, I didn't want to be the one. I said, consensus. We're going to build consensus. I said, fuck, fine. So they walk out, and I'm talking to Angela. I'm like, I don't feel good about this. And so everybody's now finishing up, grabbing a cookie or whatever. I go out to, like, this. My parents were there to this separate section. So it was my parents, Andre, and Jordan Pusey were sitting there having a beer or whatever. And I walk over, and I just look at Jordan. I said, I think you might have embarrassed us. I said, I think we're going to get embarrassed. I don't know why. I don't have a good feeling. So about 5 minutes later, they're announcing the awards and everything, and there's like this groan, and I'm staying way out in the corner. And then there's murmurings. I hear people in the porch. I hear people over there. Did you hear what he said? Did you hear what he said? And I'm like, oh no. And Andre, of course, has to be the one to tell me. He comes walking over. He was like, you know the chili that won? I was like, yeah. Mm-hmm. He goes, it was Andrew Cassie's. He got it from Texas Roadhouse.
No way.
He got it from fucking Texas. He got a bunch of small ones. He poured it in one thing. He played a bit.
Fell
he did a get.
For the
he
did. Get. Oh, wow.
I literally wanted to crawl in a hole and die.
Oh, my God.
They beat you with a Texas
they
Roadhouse
beat us with the fucking Texas Roadhouse chili. Now, did I feel. Now.
That's hilarious.
It was funny. I can't
so
say it wasn't funny.
Funny.
The guy.
I mean, they've been in business for years.
You kind of should know that.
That's what Andre said.
Some
look,
to
people
it.
Like it. People like it.
They got a good chili.
That's funny. Texas Roadhouse. I'll tell you a story about Texas Roadhouse.
My buddy Andre said he was next year. He's just going to bring Wendy's chili and see if that wins.
Nice to
see,
work at a Wendy's.
Throw a little
now.
Finger in there for good.
Nice to work at a Wendy's, boy.
Remember that lady?
You know what the chili's is? The chili and Wendy's is right.
What?
I could say it because they can't sue me. I was there every day. The burgers, you know, they line the burgers up, you know, on the grill.
Yeah.
They put raw, heifer, and just line them up and just move them down to the burger maker. So you line up like six rows and let them
like
cook.
And
the ones that that cook too far, you put them in a little pot by your leg. And
so not quite trash, but on the way to the floor.
And when it fills up, you put it in the freezer, and when it's time to make chili, you take it out, you put it into the thing, and that's the chili meat.
That's okay. Actually not that bad.
Yeah.
It's not that bad on the surface because the trash can is not far away, and it's really busy. A lot of things wind up in the meat.
Oh.
So we were told never to put anything other than meat in this pail ever.
That's the meat bucket.
Yeah,
well, it's just labeled meat only in this bucket.
But I don't go to Wendy's.
But they're both around the same height, same color. The trash can.
I don't go either.
That's how it was then. We're talking about 100 years ago.
I wonder if
ago.
That's how it is at Son of a Cure Hoffner's Wendy's.
That's 100 years ago. But the chili was always good at Wendy's.
So the guy who won, this guy Andrew, has a big mustache, but it's just a mustache. So everybody was making fun of him, say he looked like a porn star and all this stuff.
Because of the mustache.
So then I come to find out, the guy who made the chili that I liked was Owen's next door neighbor, who had won two straight years. He was on a hat trick, and he lost the third one. Now the sun's gone down. It's about 7 p.m., 7:30. This guy is fucking wasted. He comes up to me. He's like, this can't stand. He's like, this would not stand.
I demand
house.
A recount.
This guy, and just to give you a sort of, and this is not a, you know, a judgmental statement. It's just a description so you guys can kind of understand. This guy is he's from Claymont, and he's a huge Eagles fan.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of get me there.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes, this wouldn't stand in my house. I'm like, well, it's not in my house. Let's not do anything rash. He goes, I'm shaving his. We're gonna hold him down. I'm shaving his mustache off. I'm like, what? He's like, I got my Clippers, right? He took fucking Clippers out of his pocket. He had them.
Why do you?
I'm like,
why does he have Clippers?
I'm like, bro, because like he had them. He has them things. So he must have went in his house.
Oh, got his that Clippers, guy's house.
Because yeah, he was the neighbor.
Yeah.
Remember, oh, this guy was the neighbor. So he went to his house, came back with Clippers.
They said they had thought about it.
So this was a premeditated.
Yeah, he said, what can I do?
So then I walk away and I realize he goes to Owen. Like, he's going up to people. Like, he's completely lost his mind.
He's campaigning now.
Well, he's campaigning, but he's also just, like, telling people how upset he is and that he wants to, like, take some kind of action. All because of this goddamn Roadhouse, Texas Roadhouse show.
Funny.
It was a thing, but...
So did you do it?
No. Well, no, we did not.
So he's...
guy got actually very creepy. Like, he actually creeped... There were some women there that he creeped out. He really went off the deep end.
The neighbor.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you, I mean, that's what happened to Al Gore.
Yeah, that's right. And again,
that's what happened to Al Gore. That's a throw off.
She's always bringing stuff back to politics.
He unfairly lost an election.
They were on elections.
And he lost his mind.
From Chile to elections.
Well, because it was, I mean.
He lost his mind, Medina?
Yeah.
Al Gore's crazy?
I don't know if he's crazy, but
I
like,
think it was a period. Kinda, he lost his mind like Chappelle.
He had like a breakdown.
He had a period of time.
Chappelle's stage of lost your mind.
Yes.
Chappelle
so
level.
There was like, he had a breakdown. And then
a Will Smith level of mind.
Yeah, and then you come back.
Because
now Al Gore is sort of back.
Is he back?
I didn't know Al Gore.
Dave Chappelle's back. I don't know if I'd put him with that.
Yeah.
I wasn't. It's not just about politics, though. It's like he won that. He should have won that contest.
Yeah, today
he would. Square.
Today he would have won.
Yeah, and the Chili, like that guy should have won.
Okay.
And he just couldn't make it make sense.
Right. He was. He couldn't. Correct. He could.
So
he couldn't. He,
that's
in his
what
mind,
I mean.
He,
like
he couldn't conceive in his mind how that happened. I couldn't really either. I was there.
Yeah,
but all I kept telling him was, talk to Angela. She knows the whole story.
Can you imagine if George W. Bush, it turned out he was Texas Roadhouse?
I didn't know Al Gore had a moment like that. I didn't know.
I must not have been paying attention. He fell off.
Yeah, like, I mean, it was 20 years ago at least, so 20 years.
I must not have been paying attention. I know he went around for like maybe, was it like when he started counting the over again?
Yeah.
And that was all. I don't know.
Well, then
I know
he got like really into climate change,
okay.
Which I mean, to
which
be
is
fair,
okay.
You know,
well, he made
it was a big deal.
He made a lot of money off of climate change.
It's a big deal. Figs are ripening on our fig tree now in the middle of October.
Yeah,
which is probably not correct.
A mosquito bit me. You know,
Susan said the same thing. She's like, what's happening?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, we kind of know what's happening. Everybody just doesn't want to say anything.
The birds are confused. Like, is it the north or south? It's just. The birds are confused. The deer are like, what? Is it Christmas? Is it springtime? It's supposed to be.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Where's my...
I want to save a little time because I also wanted to plug and mention something extremely exciting. There's a short documentary film. It's 30, 40 minutes?
25
minutes. Okay, so it's in like a 30-minute block. So a documentarian... has been following Medina around for about a year. I met her over the phone actually as she was starting and had a couple conversations with her. And so there is a documentary film that's getting ready to be released called Stand Up for Medina about Medina's life as a politician come stand up and just like sort of behind the scenes stuff. But of course, you know, Hamas was able to do a pretty incredible effort in resisting their oppression. And so that started a whole new thing for you and a whole new issue for you. And so it's going to be a really compelling documentary. I saw the trailer. It's really cool. And I also know that it's going to debut on Al Jazeera English early next month. Is that what it is?
Late October, early November.
Late October, early November. Yeah. I think that's incredible. Stand Up for Medina. You'll be hearing more about it. Yeah, hit me up, too, because we've had some preliminary discussions about having a local screening at a theater either in Wilmington or potentially in your district. And I've reached out to a few people who might help me plan it because I think it would be really neat to have something here. Kind of goes with the alternative media and alternative art
sort of
thing.
I mean, it's an independent film, so yeah.
But do you want to talk about it a little bit? Give a couple minutes of background because it's an incredible project.
Yeah. So Zainab Sultan is the director and producer. It's executive produced by Lena Srivastava. This is Zainab's directorial debut, and we actually met on a Zoom call. I was on a panel about Muslim women in politics, and she DM'd me in there privately and was like, "Hey, I'm a filmmaker in New Jersey, would love to connect and do a project about you." And I just kind of figured she was like an amateur, maybe a college student, and was like, "Oh, that's cute. Yeah, sure. Here's my number." And you know, over the next couple of months, she reached out. We got together here in Delaware. She was like, "This would be like a 2 to 3 year thing. I'd follow you around, you know, see what happens, kind of thing." And I was like, "Yeah, okay, sure. That's cute. All right, sweetie, you want to follow me around, do your thing, like whatever." Then over the next few months, she started winning grants to pay for the project. And one day she calls me. I'm on the way to my sister's tennis match. And she's like, "Don't tell anybody. It's like, it's not signed off on yet, but I met with Al Jazeera and they really like the project and they want to distribute it," which is really phenomenal for an independent filmmaker to be able to get their first, you know, film that they're directing a distributor that quickly. And she was like, "But they want it in October." And her plan was like the 2 to 3 years of filming. So it really accelerated in the springtime. And they've been editing, and I got to see the first version of the final cut over the weekend. It's surreal.
Okay. Yeah. Well, like I said, we just saw the trailer. Susan and I saw the trailer was shared with us a few nights ago. Susan was, I'll tell you, because it is a sort of a behind the scenes, and you spoke about it more when, you know, people will see it. They don't need to speak about it now, but there's a scene where you're, I guess, making phone calls maybe, or maybe you were listening to voicemails and you had your hair, you know, you had your head covered, but just sort of a bonnet or like a, it wasn't the hijab.
Yeah, yeah.
And afterwards, Susan looked at me and she's like, "You remember that thing?" She's like, I've never seen Medina without a hijab. I think I saw her ear." And she was like,
"It looks like
she went." You know what she said? She said, and I'm not even kidding. She said this straight. She's like, "I felt a little uncomfortable."
I think that's PG.
She's like, I don't think I've seen her either.
Oh my god!
And I was like, I said, "Now that you say that, I don't think I have either."
Let's look.
Yeah, guys. There will be a disclaimer when my ear comes on. If you need to leave the room, leave the room before that scene. It can be disturbing.
That part of your cheekbone and ear is haram.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited about it, and I wanted to plug that too before we finish, because that's going to be a cool thing that we're going to try to get wider sort of viewing of in this area as well.
Cool. I appreciate that. And like, I'll say one thing that I found interesting in this process, because like I said, I didn't know really what I was signing up for. I just was trying to be helpful to, you know, this young upstart, like, "Okay, you need to come to meetings with me? Sure." I didn't realize to, you know, illustrate the full picture, you have to be in sync with the director, right? So, like, we would sit on the phone and she'd be like, "All right, what are you doing tomorrow? Okay, who's going to be at that? Where are you going the next day? Who's going to be at that? Where is that? Can I go to that meeting?" And I'd be like, "No, you can't go to that meeting." And so it created this added step. Like, I'm already running my own schedule as a legislator, setting my meetings for myself most of the time. And then now I've got to, like, think about, okay, well, can Zainab come to this? And who do I need? Whose permission do I need to get her in? And I just found this funny dynamic where when I would ask my legislative colleagues, they would start to shuffle and be like, you know, "No, like, does she have to?"
If you're scared, say you're scared.
But when I would ask the comedians, they'd be like, "Oh yeah, what do you need like lighting? Like, what do you need? Do you want to hook up to the speaker system so she's got the audio from the mic? Like, do you want to just do a full set instead of 5 minutes at the open mic?" And I'm like, like, "Can I be in it?" You know, like, it's very funny seeing how, like, politicians just kind of shy away from being featured. And then the comics that I work with, all of them are kind of like, yeah, cool. So when's it going to come out and will I be in it? Can I use this as a credit?
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Because everybody right. wants to be like, ooh, that
yeah.
must be.
We're all trying to get credits, you know.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
seen on, you know, yeah. Al Jazeera.
Yeah. Middling at this club in, with for Medina and such and such.
You a comic too? You stand up?
No. Like I said, we've done a lot of these and we've tried to do like funny bits and stuff, but it's not the same thing. You know, we do some writing, but I've never done it in front of an audience, which is that's the whole part of it. You know.
Yeah, but
it's interesting because what I'd like to do for the screening is have a little introduction, but then actually do this sort of like a panel discussion as a discussion afterwards.
Yeah.
So it would be like. The podcast would co-sponsor the screening, and then we would do a discussion for a live audience afterwards and record that. I don't think I've done too much in front of an audience. I've read some poetry and stuff just for fun.
You booked me on like one of my first shows.
Did I?
Yeah, for I think it was a Delaware Call fundraiser.
That's right.
The Nomad.
Yep.
And it was like, it was early for me. Like yeah. I think I had a type 5, but it wasn't that tight, you know, in retrospect.
Well, your closer killed. So it was like,
I don't even remember what I closed.
It was about Coons or Carper, I think.
Oh, well, yeah.
It was a little bit of setup. It was like a minute of setup and then a really good joke about like a local politician that killed.
I don't even remember. I know part of the joke, but I remember it was in that time period was where I was like, I need to get out of my comfort zone. And you had two bands, I think, that performed.
Yeah, there was an opening act where the two of the members of the band played sort of like a what I call an acoustic set. And then the full band played. But in the set break, you did five or six minutes in the set break.
He calls me and he's like, in the middle, why don't you do like a type 5? And I'm like, I'm not a comedian. What?
I did to Johnny. I was like, hey, can you do a type 5?
Yeah,
it was great.
Did you do a time flying right now? Or we're gonna do a time flying for him, Medina.
It's wild, wild. She's a hijabi woman. That's wild, wacky stuff.
I don't like this stuff. Yeah, it's the first time ever on my show, a Muslim lady will be doing stand-up. First time here on talk show. And
what do you I'll tell you,
they're a spectacle. You know, you kidding me? It is, yeah.
Yeah.
You do impressions also? Do you do impressions?
I heard you do an impression. By the way, before we, because one of the guys who inspired me was like a leftist broadcaster, sort of a public intellectual lecturer, political broadcaster, Michael Brooks. He passed away. But he used to do, he had a lot of humor in his shows, and he would do impressions that he was very good at, but it was always the opposite. So he did a Bernie Sanders impression, but he did Maoist Bernie. So it's Bernie like, there's the millionaires and the billionaires, and they all have to be shot against the wall. You know, it's like one of those things.
Yeah.
There was a right-wing Mandela, so it was like Mandela, but he talked like Trump. But then you did the MLK. You did the reactionary MLK. Incredible.
Oh, you like that?
Oh, I was cold. I guess, I don't know if you saw, as soon as I heard it, I put a message on there, because every time I try to do right-wing Mandela, it gets cut out. Carl will not allow it to go. And I was like, well, now you can do reactionary MLK. What'd you say? You said, I have a dream that young black boys and young black girls can all participate in ethnic cleansing.
Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
You're talking about the thing we just did last week.
Yeah, he listened to our show.
That's
right?
Cool.
Good. Yeah.
That's cool.
I have a dream today. I was like, and I'm like, Carl, can I do it? He's like, you still can't do it.
That's the thing, though. Like, it's just the two of us. It's just me and my uncle in a room hanging out. Yeah. So he was laughing. I thought it was funny. But then when I was editing, I'm like, should I cut this out? Like, are we the only two that'll find it funny?
Yeah. Carl was funny, too.
Yeah, it's good. Be thankful you have a Carl, you know, because it's good to have someone. Don't make that face, Rob. It's good to have someone that's like, nah, you don't want that on the internet, you know? So, but we do impressions. My uncle's, he's been doing impressions since the 70s. I mean, mentioned the talent show.
Yeah.
You didn't mention that you just, well, you know this because you've listened to our show, but he wasn't planning to do comedy.
No, I was planning to sing.
And then he won the talent show.
From comedy.
So, yeah, it's hard to now sit and write.
They just told
you went off improvising.
You know, when the guys were supposed to show up to sing with me in the college show when I was in high school. And they never showed up the night of the show. So, and they hadn't come to the rehearsal either. So I kind of like knew I was going to do something. So I had planned the impressions in my head, you know. So I just did the impressions. It worked. I won the show. That was a long time ago, though.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, it held up for like 5 years. I was popular for like 5 years in my town on that talent show.
Nice.
Chester. Chester, Pennsylvania.
I actually got gigs for like 5 years from that. Yeah, I really did.
But there's
so
like,
you're gigging
doing...
now? We got to plug, got to make sure with like your next your next gigs. Let's plug some of those as well.
Let's see. So this will come out Friday.
This will come out 2 days, yeah.
Yeah, so tomorrow I've got a show over at Bootless Stage Works on Broome Street right around the corner with Belinda Clear. Now I'm forgetting my other buddies that are on the show, but the headliner is Major Johnson, who's a really funny local comic. So come through and support. That'll be a fun show. And you can check out my link tree, which is on our page for other upcoming shows.
We will, as I always say, Carl will link to it in the show notes.
Cool. Okay.
Well, let's do this. Let me thank you very much, Rocky, for coming in. Let me thank you very much for coming in. I very much appreciate it. I love the work you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah. It was good meeting you, too.
Oh, you're welcome.
Medina, thank
you. Nice meeting you, too.
We didn't even talk about like this whole house leadership thing, but we'll save that for later.
Okay.
We'll be back.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
Thanks for having us.
Of course, of course. And as we always say, in memory of Michael Brooks, left is best.